podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
For all the latest betting markets, odds and promotions, visit williamhill.com. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly. William Hill, it's who you play with.
Hello and welcome to Middle Please Umpire.
Middle Please Umpire.
Very good, beautiful bit of atmosphere. That is Mark, the voice of Mark Woods, of course, the unmistakable Northumbrian tones of World Cup winning fast man and occasional off spinner, Mark Woods. Firstly, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Here in my Sri Lanka room, we've just arrived, so isolating currently, as is the government rules.
Our government or the Sri Lankan government?
A bit of both, actually. So it's been teed up by the ECB and the Sri Lankan government that when we got here, we had to go through all the tests and have a period of isolating. Then if we brought back more positive tests, then we could be let out. It was strange. I mean, if you've ever seen the film Monsters, Inc., it was a bit like that when we got off the plane. It was like a 23-19, and there was all these guys in suits coming over. I mean, we had our shoes washed three times, or anti-back three times, with guys in green suits. Then we went to the guys in white suits who did our hands in a big hazmat suit. And then to finish, we went to the guys in orange suits who did the test up my nose. But in between, we had to sit in a sort of classroom, single file, away from each other. So it was very sci-fi movie or Monsters, Inc., if you want. But all in all, we made it to the hotel. What have you been doing? What have you been doing? Come on, you can't ask me and then tell me about you.
I'm freezing. I'm in Wales and it's very cold, any more than 2 feet from the radiator. As I speak now, my youngest son is sitting across the table eating a toasted sandwich and humming. So if you can hear humming and crunching, that is, it's my responsibility, but it's not my fault.
And is that because these toasties rock hard that we'd hear the crunching from the freezing temperatures? Or?
That is... It's just we couldn't get it from the toaster to the plate quick enough.
I tell you what was a major decision for me before coming here was what to pack in my case. Because obviously when you go on tour, you can pack a few different bits and bobs. But knowing that you're in a bubble and you can't go anywhere.
Solitaire?
No, solitaire hasn't made it, but the toilet basketball hoop has. My wife got me the toilet basketball game where you hang the hoop and whilst you're at the toilet, you can throw that. So if I'm not...
Oh, do you know, that's not how I pictured it working. I imagined you lifting up the seat and attaching the hoop, and then you a basket is also a...
Yeah, that's...
You know, when you get it in the pan.
You know, that could be a bit messy. I've gone for the cleaner version of hanging it on the door and throw the door. But if the bowling doesn't go to plan, at least I'll leave this trip a bit like Michael Jordan. And, of course, you get loads of chocolates at Christmas, don't you? I've brought all my chocolates, so... my suitcase isn't really filled with clothes or things. It's chocolates, biscuits, toilet games.
And, you've bought food and things that you can help you pass the time on the lavatory.
Yeah.
Is that
normal?
That is. Yeah.
I mean, they both play against each other. I feel if I eat a lot of the chocolate, then I'll be at the toilet a lot, which means I get to play my game a lot. Is that not how you're seeing
it? I think that's very time efficient. Yeah. It wouldn't have made sense if you bought, I don't know, diuretics and Twister. Although that's a very good... that is a workout. I mean, that presumably is someone's patented weight loss regime. And then now you're in that phase, then you're just going to do lots of training. But what...
Yeah.
It's the... When you... All those fielding drills and stuff, I can sort of see why you have to do them because it looks good. But also... What are you really doing? Because presumably you've arrived reasonably ready to play Test cricket.
Yeah.
What can you actually do in the last few days that make a difference?
Well, before we come, it's all about physical prep. So, are you in good shape? Have you been doing your running? Have you been doing your gym work? And then when you get here, it's along the same sort of line. So, I've got a Peloton in the house, and I subscribed the app. So, I've been doing sort of bodyweight workouts in the room. Because that's all you can do. Obviously, you can't get anywhere else. So I've done a couple of them already in the room. And then as soon as you can sort of get out and you start playing cricket, it's all about switching from that sort of physical, although you'll try to keep a little bit of it up. It's then getting your cricket prep done so that when you come to the first test, you're not undercooked or underdone. In terms of field and drill, the high catches is pretty much standard what any club cricketer would do It's high catches, someone at Triscothic, at Collingwood, Silverwood, they would whack catches close to the boundary. The only difference is, I would say, is that a lot of the best fielders, so Jordan, Stokes, they try and take one-handers, or they try and catch as if they're close to the line, or they will try catching it close to the line and flicking it back, so that if that scenario comes, because they're that good at just catching it, that they try and work to a match scenario and do it at match intensity where it might be a difficult situation. They try catching with the opposite hand. So if it's hit high to the left, they'll catch it with the right hand with their fingers pointing up, things like that. And then the other sort of side of things would be the close-in catching. So Collie will get an incredible ball, so it's not a cricket ball, and he'll pretend that you're an extra cover and point, and he'll smack catches as hard as he can with an extra cut, like sort of one bounce speed. And then the competitive sort of side of fielding, we have a game called 21, which is two teams. You have two teams positioned between point, square leg, mid-wicket, extra cover, mid-off, mid-on, and two teams. And you have throw the ball at the bowler's end. If you hit the stumps, that's 1 point. If the guy then collects and throws it into the wicketkeeper's end successfully, it's 2 points. If you hit the stumps, 3 points.
And then what do these? And then ultimately, someone wins a speedboat, or what do the points?
No, it's not Bully's prize board or catchphrase. Unfortunately, it's just you're the winning team. But when you get about 18, they bring about a dog ball that has like holes in it. So when they hit it, it makes like a sound.
Oh, you must love
and
that.
It wobbles all over. Of course, it's not easy to throw, but if you mess up the fielding, so if you miss field or you don't collect, if you don't back it up right, or it's not a good throw at the wicketkeeper, then it's a turnover to the other team. So that can get quite competitive, and it's the first team to 21. And that's the game show, 21!
I remember when I lived in London a few years ago, I went to a cricket club to try and play. As you know, I'm very bad. But I turned up one night, and I was trying to play for the friendlies, sort of friendly second 11, essentially. And there were not many members of our team there. We turned up, and there was about two of us that had turned up for nets. And so the chairman or whatever said, well, just go out to the middle and practice with the ones and twos. And they were very serious cricketers. And it was really terrifying. And we started doing this really complicated fielding drill. And the coach was Paul Weeks, used to open for Middlesex. And this really complicated training drill broke down. And he was a bit cross. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be terrifying. And actually, he said a thing that I thought was completely great. He said, look, the reason that went so wrong is that some of you know how this drill works and some of you don't, all right? Now, the people I'm cross with are the people who know how it works and haven't taken the opportunity to explain to the people who don't how it works. You would have had time to get everyone up to speed, and you haven't done that. And you're the ones that have made this drill fail. And it really made me think sort of very hard about like team dynamics and the importance of sharing responsibility and that sort of thing. And I just thought it was really inspiring. But also I thought, oh, that's good. I thought he was going to shout at me for having absolutely no idea what I'm doing.
Trevor Bayliss used to say to us, to be fair, things that you would tell an under 10 and under 11. So it wasn't any rocket science behind it. It would be like, keep lighting the ball. Good throw, get up, attack it. Just little tiny things. And these aren't rocket science things when you're catching a ball or fielding the ball. But he wanted to do the basics so well that it meant fielding was easier.
What about under the new regime?
Well, it's pretty much carried on the same. Obviously, we've got Chris Silverwood as head coach, but Paul Collingwood runs the fielding drills.
That's quite odd, though, isn't it? In the way that like Collie was such an extraordinary fielder. I mean, presumably there's things that he could do instinctively.
And Collie being such a good fielder, a good coach, you'd think he might get frustrated or things like that, but actually he's excellent with what he says. He just wants commitment, communication, all the little things that you might, as long as you are trying to attack the ball, communicating, which is, I'm guessing, the thing that you were on about. So if you have to run back and someone's with you, or you're doing a drill where it's a bit complicated, it's talking to each other and, all these things that you think, because he was so good.
Do you shout mine or do you shout your name?
No, you have to shout your name.
Or do you go?
Well, there's only me and you would know that. If I was doing that with you, then I would do it. But I mean, I don't think that would work, the wood whistle, because
Josh Butler knows it.
Yeah, well, if you were to do the wood whistle, would I not look up and think, oh, there's someone here who I know, that's the danger whistle, there's obviously something wrong, I need to find out where they are, and would leave the catch. So I would hope you wouldn't do the wood whistle.
Well, no, there's been a spillage on aisle 7. What's the biggest sky you've ever been under, Mark?
I took a catch in the World Cup against Pakistan at Trent Bridge. That seemed to take forever. And then that's one of them where you can sort of feel yourself, rather than just catching it, you go, right, get your hands high, make sure you watch the ball. Don't drop this, you need to catch this guy. All those things run through your head. But actually then, the moment when it just comes to you, you forget all that and it's just get yourself in a good position, watch the ball. But when it goes ultra high with a bit of snow on it coming down, that's when you can almost think too much.
That's hellish.
What about you?
Well, I'm I got concussed. Did I tell you about this? I got concussed under a really high one once at the nursery.
Went very through your hands.
Very unpleasant. It didn't go right through them. It sort of. I was glad it hit my hands at all because that took some of the pace off it. But I had a seam mark. But I did something I'd never tried to do before. I went fingers up. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
The Aussie way.
But I quite like reaction stuff. If you're close and it comes, you either catch it or you don't. It's the having the sort of thing. It's like being asked to make up your mind about something and you're going,
So you'd be a short leg. Are you putting your hand up for...
Short leg.
For the tour? Yeah, you're putting your hand up for it?
I would say, because I'm a sort of non-bowling Ashley Giles, I guess. That would put me in the gully, maybe. Remind me, what is your current favoured fielding position, Mark?
In test matches, it's got to be fine leg, hasn't it? You can switch off.
It's very important to be able to get out there and switch off.
Yeah, I thought. Well, I'm not gonna give you some sort of.
Even if you're in the middle of a spell, you'd be at fine leg. But if you're not in the middle of a spell, where would you be feeling?
Mid on, or in one day as your third man. I think. Look, I'm not even gonna lie to you. I think it's important to switch off at times in between balls. Otherwise, you'd be a bit, you'd go a bit cuckoo. So, I mean, Joss actually go back to your field to your weird stuff that we've got. Joss wears a harness to, and Johnny. Of course, best, or they wear a harness to keep in. Someone puts a big sort of resistance band on their back, and they'll have to move side to side with this sort of harness on. And it looks like, you know, they're being thrown around trying to put them off balance when they're weight keeping and stuff.
Well, like those things you'd get from the early learning centre, so a child could sort of hang from a doorway and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But there's some great bit of kit knocking around. I mean, the rubber bat's the one now, isn't it? Every club cricket coach has got one of those, the small orange bats to do for high catch, and they're the in thing at the minute. I'm just wondering when they're going to get something for fastball. I mean, we've got the rubber stumps, but they've not really give us much there, have they?
That's not exciting. You don't get anything. Like you're saying, if they get fancy bats they can use using the inside edge or the outside edge, there's nothing you can... Could you give a fastballer a really heavy ball just to make you sort of slowly stronger?
Well, we've got that, but it doesn't really do a lot for me.
You just need an arm around the shoulder and some confidence-building words, don't you, Mark? That's all you need to do.
So today's question for everybody listening, I'd love you to send in anything related to training, whether you've got something, a weird drill, whether you use an apparatus that's a bit strange, or whether you've been really innovative and you've come up with something completely different. Write in, let us know on the usual platforms, and let us know your weird and wonderful drills, please.
Weird and wonderful drills. Right, we've got some correspondence here then that has been sent in. So a while ago, Mark asked for club nicknames. Here we go. From Nutbrook CC, we have a player called Ali Hodkinson, whose nickname is Abu Hamza. Reason being, he simply cannot catch. He has been blaming it on hand sanitizer recently. All I can say is that Mark Wood has his head in his hands. Right. From Andrew Monk, dear Grandad and Owl, a couple of nicknames to share. We had a player, very successful off the field, so was originally called Shagger. Someone wrote it in his cap, S. Hagger. His future wife saw it and he said he borrowed it from a teammate called Simon. which became his new nickname, of course. Also, we have a chap called Crime. He's never bought a round of drinks in his life, hence Crime doesn't pay. Keith Ford. Darren Goff nicknamed one of our players at the Royal Signals CC Bomb Scare. It was down to his boring personality. He could clear a room in seconds.
Oh. A bit of theme here.
That is pretty brutal. Yes, it's this is probably our first terrorism themed correspondence package. Okay, from Neil Wakefield, a club tea and a legendary story in one. So Neil says, really enjoying the pod, and the David Gower episode was a joy. Suggests we've got, what, a 20% hit rate? This legendary story from the late 1970s is also mildly tea-related, so covers two topics. During a game at Calverton CC in Nottinghamshire, our veteran opener, who thought he was a pinch hitter long before it was a thing, went for a hook and top-edged the ball into his own forehead. This was pre-helmet days. Unfortunately... I'm just trying to picture, when people are putting pen to paper, think, what does this sound like? Does this... Anyway, unfortunately, he started having some sort of seizure. Panic ensued and lots of shouting to the pavilion to bring on a stretcher. After a few minutes of crashing and bashing, the two tea ladies came running out with a trestle table, which normally housed the sandwiches and cakes, turning it into a hilarious scene from a 1950s slapstick farce. Having left the field unceremoniously on a table, he made a full recovery and carried on with his prototype Ali Brown antics for a few more seasons with very mixed results. That's extraordinary. I saw the word seizure and I panicked. But that is the way of the broadcaster of the current age, to be endlessly fearful of offence. I'm slightly worried about the gentleman having a seizure in Neil Wakefield's thing. You kind of...
I don't know why you were laughing so hard. I thought it was going to be funny and then it was quite serious.
I was laughing in the sort of horror. It was a kind of, oh no, where's this going? It's sort of... Nervous laughter, if I'm honest. My problem is my nervous laughter sounds like normal. Well, it doesn't sound normal, but it sounds like the way that other people laugh at things that they find genuinely funny.
I don't think we would bat well together, Miles. I couldn't work you out.
Do you think I would just get nervous at the other end and just start shrieking with laughter?
Well, imagine Mitchell Starr bounces you.
Yeah.
And you've just sweared back, and then I'm saying, oh, was that fast? And you just start hysterically laughing.
I don't think
then I'd... I'm not sure...
I don't think I'd swerve out of the way. I don't think I'd see it, and I think it would clock me. And that would be it.
Well, let's hope you don't need the dinner ladies to carry out a tray table for you.
I don't even know who the fastest person I've ever faced would be. I faced Andrew Caddick, but he would have been mid-40s by then, I suppose.
I think this is... I don't know if... Maybe I'm reading the signals wrong, but I think this is an invitation for me to bowl at you. Is this what you're trying to say?
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Mm. Well, let's set that up. Me, you, and Joe Hart. Joe Hart, left arm over. I'll bowl right arm over, and you get as many as you can.
What an absolutely terrifying prospect. I mean, Joe Hart was talking about like athletes, fellow athletes, being terrified at the prospect of facing you.
Yeah, and I actually spoke to Mo and Ali about that, about when Mo was a kid and he was sledging Joe Hart. And Mo said that Joe Hart was an excellent player. He said that he was in all the county setups. He played West Midlands cricket, so the region, not just... So he was the best. He was the best Worcester cricketer, and Mo was the best Warwickshire cricketer. He said he was as tall as he is now or something, and that... He was as good as everybody else, but then he chose the football route. He's played for Shrewsbury Town when he was like 15, 16, Moore said. So I think Joe's done himself a disservice there. I think he was a proper player.
So Grandad and Owl, those could stick as our nicknames on this, I suppose. I don't mind that at all now. I mean, I'm actually wearing a cardigan today, so I think Grandad is an ever more appropriate moniker.
Are you wearing braces? Do you have a miner's cap? Do you have an allotment?
I don't have a miner's cap or an allotment, no. But I would think quite seriously about investing in both, actually.
Do you talk about our Jackie?
yes, almost relentlessly. Do you know what? Our Jackie, you're describing, of course, your view of a granddad might be slightly different from my view of a granddad, I guess. I'm just reading a book, actually, that I'm completely loving. It's called Slipless in Settle by Harry Pearson.
You're currently reading it in your calipers.
I'm currently reading it between flare-ups. Yeah, Slips and Settle by Harry Pearson, who used to write for The Guardian and wrote a lot for When Saturday Comes. And it's about cricket in the north, Mark. It sketches this lovely pen portraits, I suppose, of northern types. And in it, I've actually just read last night, so I read a chapter where he visits Ashington. Famous, of course, for producing Steve Harmison. Mark, you're not wearing trousers.
Well, it's 135 degrees. I'm in Sri Lanka.
This is a work environment, Mark.
I've got my shorts on. Don't worry. I know I showed you maybe a little bit of leg there. And what about my half-shaved ankle? Look at my ankle tape. If that isn't a lovely sight for your eyes, I don't know what it is.
Okay. Well, you're going to envy me, listeners. I'm just going to put my glasses on to see what on earth. Mark is in an absolutely stifling hotel room, and he just suddenly lifted his... He looked like a normal person, and then he lifted his legs up, and it looked like some sort of, I don't know, the bath scene in The Notebook, something like that.
Miles, do you know who our guest is this week? I might even give you a clue.
Did he used to open the batting for Lancashire and England?
It's Lakeside Lizzie. I think we should get Lakeside Lizzie or Elizabeth Armand from the Times, who's kindly agreed to come on the show. I think we should get her on in 2 seconds after I've just been to throw a basketball and a hoop at my toilet.
I'd just like to take a moment to thank our sponsors who have helped make this podcast possible. Cricketer's Gin is the perfect pairing for tonic, but also this podcast, as they also believe in creating something enjoyable around the sport we love. Cricketer's is an exquisite local gin, a family business, and was inspired during a game of cricket on a sunny village green in Pinckneys, Berkshire. The founders decided that the quintessential British game, along with the wild botanicals growing in abundance nearby, deserved a bespoke artisan gin of its own. Cricketer's is distilled to the highest London gin standards. All the ingredients are natural and added before distillation, ensuring it's the purest form of gin, and that Cricketer's delivers a beautifully smooth, juniper-forward gin. You can find this wonderful cricketing tipple at cricketersgin.com, and we thank them for their support. There is a special 10% discount if you use the code POD.
William Hill's safer gambling tools help you stay in control. You can set deposit limits, session reminders, and take timeouts whenever you need them. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly. William Hill, it's who you play with.
So we are joined now by our guest, Elizabeth Ammon, cricket reporter for The Times. May we call you Lizzie rather than Elizabeth, even though that's your byline?
Absolutely.
Does anyone call you Elizabeth?
They do call me Elizabeth, but I think only when they're trying to be patronising to me.
Oh, right. Is that in a sort of an admin situation?
Yeah.
Miles, I'm wondering, obviously, the Twitter handle that Lizzie has is Lakeside Lizzie. I'm wondering what alliteration we could get for you. For your obvious cricket name, Monmouth Miles.
Something that's to do with, well, leg side. Presumably that's your batting preference, not your bowling.
Yeah, well, it's all bottom hand. Yeah. All bottom hand.
Bottom hand.
straight to cow.
Shoveler. I don't know. Well, we need one for you. A W for wood as well, obviously.
Well, wickets wood. However.
Wickets wood. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what I'll go for. Middle and off miles.
Off. Love it.
I don't think I've ever pitched a ball there. So obviously I've got some experience of cricket journalism, Lizzie, but it's quite out of date. And I kind of wonder how your life as a cricket reporter works then, not just at the moment, because obviously these are unprecedented, et cetera, but in a normal course of events then, do you just do as you're told? Do you ring up somebody and pitch ideas? I'd like to do netball this week. I've noticed England are playing the West Indies. Perhaps I should write about that. How does it work?
Well, mostly I do as I do as I'm told. I mean, I'm quite, as you know, on The Times, we're blessed with Michael Atherton and Steve James and Simon Wilde. So I just do as I'm told. I pick up all the bits they don't want to do, mostly. As Woody will contest, cricket never actually stops, does it? Ever. It just never stops. Even when they're not actually on a pitch, something's happening somewhere, either with the players or with the men in suits. And I do write about the men in suits quite a lot because, you know, obviously they're quite important.
Because with the players, you get the access, what, from Danny Rubin or someone. What about the men in suits? How easy is it? Can you pick up a phone and ring one of the mysterious figures in a grey suit and say, what's actually going on?
Kind of, if you have a decent relationship with them. I mean, generally you have to kind of go through the protocols and say, do you mind if I speak to so-and-so? Obviously, it's much easier with county cricket, and county cricket is my love and my passion.
It's the thing
I bang on about. It's the most
traditionalist,
wonderful.
Lizzie. Traditionalist, aren't you?
I just think county cricket's the most wonderful thing, and I think sometimes we forget that players like Woody aren't dropped into the England team by a stalk, are they? They come from somewhere, and there's been years of hard work and investment from club cricket through academies and county cricket. They don't just suddenly appear in an England shirt.
So which county cricketer has most impressed you? Which one have you nailed anyone down that's now in the England team who you thought he'll play for England?
Well, I had a look when I first tweeted about you, Woody.
See, this is better. This is what I'm talking about.
And I think it was the beginning of the 2012 season. So that was before you played for England, wasn't it?
Yes.
And yes. The tweet was, there's a lad at Durham. His name's Mark Wood. You might want to keep an eye on him. That was the tweet.
To the point. I love it.
That makes him sound like a real troublemaker.
Yeah, it does. But it is one of the genuine joys of this job. Honestly, this can make me sound really soppy, but when you spot a young player who's 17, 18, 19, make their first class debut, and then you chart their career, and then they get called up for England, and it's almost a maternal feeling where you go, that's my boy, I've been watching him. So I watched Jofra's first class debut, which was a tour match against Pakistan, and you know, there weren't very many of us in the ground, and I was commentating for the BBC, and there were about two journalists in the ground, and you know, I've never seen the bloke before in my life, and he piles it in, rattles through the Pakistan top order, and I was like, oh, okay, we better talk about this bloke a bit. And the other thing is, I actually think we don't give quite enough love to the people who are just very good county cricketers. I mean, most of us would love to make a living playing cricket. And I think being a horrible word, journeyman, but making a career out of playing cricket is really no mean feat. So, you know, Darren Stevens is the classic example. The bloke's been playing for 100 years, hasn't he? I mean, he's never had to have a proper job.
The fossil.
Well, I can't remember now if he's got a contract for this year or not.
He has because he keeps doing it. Every year he thinks it's going to be his last one, and then he goes and bustles up and takes...
I think that was the same with Collie, in a way. When I was playing with Collie, it was the fact that, you know, it would be another year. And it wasn't until he felt that his performance wasn't good enough, because he was still contributing as a captain massively to the dressing room. So people often don't see the value in, you know, people often will just look at stats and stuff, but Collie's contribution to the dressing room was still massive. Little things he would say, little insights on the game, little fielding positions.
Surely you all know all the fielding positions, Mark. You can't be relying on it that heavily.
Yeah, thank you, meddling off, Miles.
But there's one, really there's one that we do that's sort of next to the wicket keeper in case the edge is a bit... I can't remember what it's called, but perhaps we could stick a couple of people there when Mark's bowling. Were these the sort of insights?
You definitely don't want them there when I'm bowling. Spread out as often as I see when I've come on.
Spread out, lads. Yeah. Yeah. Helmets on the boundary. Yeah.
Well, I think, look, there's some county cricketers out there, especially, I think, like Rushy and obviously you mentioned Darren Stevens, people like that, who... you must know, Liz, that when you look at these county cricketers like a Rushworth and like a Darren Stevens, you think, how have they played more for England? Because they do it time and time again for their county sides. But it just seems like certain county cricketers just will never go that extra step, but will just stay at that level and be so good and so valuable. Because a lot of people not know, but a county circuit as well is very demanding. Mm. If I was to play a county circuit all the time, you could only at times bowl 80%. Because it's game after game, it's travel, it's then straight into another game, it's game after game. So the durability of these people and the sort of skill level it takes to wake up so...
And the skill, it's so, so skillful. I mean, Graham Onions is another, isn't it?
Yeah.
They just so, so skillful. And I think that it's really valuable because the young players just learn so much from that. And they're just by being on the pitch with someone who's got, you know, 15 years worth of first-class experience under their belt. There isn't much they won't have seen.
I suppose that with like England players as well, the people that don't graduate to England level, say, the people that do, one of the reasons they've got there, I suppose, is by playing that standard of cricket, isn't it? If you're playing, you know, if you're a young player and you come out and when you're making your debut, you first break into a side, you've got to face someone like Graham Onions that has that sort of level of experience at you or whatever. I remember facing, you know, Alan Richardson or someone like that. You put them on an English wicket. They're extraordinary. I faced him in a Taverners game, I think it was, Alan, and I was opening the batting with Ashley Giles. It was one of those sort of days, and he moved it so. I said to the wicketkeeper, "Is this is he a leg spinner? Why, how is this moving so much?" And he said, "And he was just trotting in off five paces." It was absolutely extraordinary. If a spinner could move it that much at club level, they would be delighted with themselves.
So when he was touching gloves, Dean, saying he's moving at miles, were you saying, "Well, is he moving it a little bit or moving it a lot? Or we just is it like first in this is actually?" Yeah.
And how does this man know my name? The other thing I remember about that game is our wicketkeeper Charlie Dale. This guy came on to bowl and he went, "Right, I don't know who this guy is. I'm going to stand up." The first one came, it was very slightly down the leg side, he barely got a glove to it, it went for four, and then happened again, he let four byes through three times in a row, he couldn't quite get to it each time. And he said, "This guy's quite quick, isn't he?" And I said, "That's Neil Carter, who opens the bowling for..." I'm not quite sure why you're standing up to him, to be honest. He said, "Oh, I see, right." And even when he was, you know, sort of 18 yards back, it was still taking a proper thud into the gloves. How did you get to the esteemed position that you're in now, Lizzie? Because it's a competitive, you know, you talk about the demands of county cricket, but to have to talk about wanting to make a living as a cricketer, to make a living as a cricket journalist, that is a very competitive world.
I mean, it all happened completely by accident. I had a proper job for 20 years. I worked for the government in national security for 20 years. And then that's something of a midlife crisis. Which is showing my age, but I've always been into cricket. I mean, I was forced because of my dad and my brother. So when I was about 13, maybe, I was at Sheffield Collegiate. My dad and my brother were at Sheffield Collegiate, Rooties Club and Bornies Club, and I discovered you could get a nice little crisp fiver if you stuck dots in a book on a Saturday afternoon, and you know, then you could go and spend it at HMV, buy a CD at HMV. I'm really showing my age now, aren't I? You know, so I did that. I just sort of sat and stuck dots in a book, and it was quite nice, really. I really quite enjoyed scoring. And then it sort of I didn't even really like cricket. I mean, I certainly didn't love it at that point, but it just osmoses into you.
Can you remember like a sort of Damascene moment? Was there something you saw on the field that you suddenly thought, hang on?
It was when Sheffield Collegiate won the national knockout. The genuine kind of joy that I saw when they won that national knockout. And these are a bunch of, you know, very good club cricketers. Rooty's dad was in that side, very good club cricketer, Rooty's dad. And I just thought, do you know what? This is amazing. This is just a bunch of disparate people who are just doing something that is quite hard work, really. You know, you play at whatever it is, 100 overs a day or 120 overs a day, and they're all pulling together. And I sort of thought, you don't really get that in other sports, do you, that we've had to spend so much time? And in the Yorkshire League, which I was scoring in, when we were in Sheffield, and we'd have to play games against Scarborough, which is 4 hours away, so we'd have to go the night before. You know, it was you became so close to these people. And now I'm a vice president at Sheffield. I've just been made a vice president at Sheffield Collegiate, and it's still the same bunch of people that were there 25 years ago, and that just gave me a sort of moment about cricket, really. But also scoring around Sheffield and around Yorkshire and Derbyshire kind of was quite a seminal time for me, really. It formed my politics, really, because it was not long after the mines had all shut down, and you know, you kind of saw the haves and have nots, and how the cricket had become, the cricket club was kind of the centre of the community, you know, it was the miners' welfare and the cricket club. And I didn't get that sense with any other sport. I mean, I didn't play because I never saw a woman play cricket. I didn't even know women could play cricket. I didn't know that. I just didn't know it was an option.
But how did you get then from there, then, from being someone, say, scoring for Sheffield Collegiate in Scarborough? How have you then got yourself to the position where you can sort of sashay into the press box at the Oval and tell Simon Wilde to get out of the way?
So I started blogging round about when blogs were first started.
That would be sort of mid-noughties, wouldn't it? 2000 and...
Yeah, it was about 2006, I think. I started blogging, and then because there weren't any women, sort of writing about cricket, the BBC asked me to do some county commentary. I started working for Spin magazine, which was run by George De Bell at the time, who's now at Crick Info, and he gave me a real break, as did the BBC. And I just sort of fell into it. And then I got offered a job. What year are we in? It must have been 2017 I got offered a job by the Times. They were kind of looking for someone to do the news element of the reporting. Obviously, reporting has got lots of different elements, and Athers is unbelievable, as is JMO, at writing technical stuff and, you know, interviews and match reports. But there's a lot of sort of straight news reporting to do. You know, you have to write about who's in what squad, or who might be in what squad, or how many minutes you can put the heavy roller on in the county championship, and, you know, all of those things.
Does Mark Wood's household have an out-for-out policy? All of these things.
Out-for-out, best saying going. That's anything for nothing to the listeners there. The two things I want to know from this, Lizzie, is firstly, did you use lots of colouring pens when you did your scoring, or was it pure just black pen? Or was it pencil so you could rub things in? Okay, yeah, different ballers. I love that. And the second thing I want to know is, if you could have, obviously you're saying there wasn't any women's cricket or girls' cricket, would you have tried your hand now if the system that's in place?
Well, I did play a bit. I mean, it was interesting. I've got a nice little away swinger. It's just that it goes about 35 miles an hour.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. It's quicker than miles.
So yeah, it's all right. I've got a nice upright seam, and it just shapes away a bit. It's just that you have to wait about 10 minutes for it to arrive at the other end.
That's even better. We used to have this guy in the local leagues called the Doc. He played for Newcastle, Jesmond, and he used to bowl these little in swingers, and they were probably about 30 miles, like slower than yours, little in swingers. And by the time it would get to you, you'd thought of three different shots. So in the end, you'd play a mixture of all three and get out. He would torture, especially if you're a young player and you just didn't know how to hit him.
What are your three shots, Mark?
Get out, embarrassingly get out, or slog it.
Lizzie, what was it like then? Going into the press box, suddenly you've gone this thing, you've done this career change, you've had your quarter-life crisis, as you say, suddenly you've been given this this olive branch, you've been given another... Like the moment in the film 8 Mile when Eminem suddenly makes his way into the hip hop battle.
I've got a thing of like Lizzie going into the press box and being like in New York. Lakeside Lizzie, quick question. The time.
It was weird. I mean, because I'd come from the civil service, which is a bit soft and fluffy, you know, great place to work, but you know, quite diverse and soft and fluffy. And I walked into a press box, there were 150 blokes in there. I couldn't see a woman, and they're all gnarly and grumpy. I mean, no, that's not fair. They're not but when you're faced with that, I was like, wow. And also, what are all these people writing? You know, what are you writing? I don't understand. It was absolutely fascinating, and I'm still absolutely fascinated. And I do end up feeling incredibly sorry for the likes of Woody and the other, because they have to sit in front of us, and because there's not many of them, you know, there's, you know, on a home series, there's only kind of 13 of them in a squad, so they have to, you know, they see us more than they would like to. I think they have to sit in front of us gnarly old hacks and listen to our stupid questions.
Honestly I don't mind it. I honestly don't mind it. I feel like it,
you have to say
it,
that.
It types. No, honestly, I honestly don't. I think if you're honest with people and you can give an honest interview, I think that's a better way to go. I mean, you must have heard a million times the cliched answers that some people give, and that's the thing that bothers me more than anything. I mean, I just think that, you know, yes, at times you kind of be reckless, but if you're honest, then people, not just journalists, but people reading or people watching, if it's a TV interview, can relate to that person more. Whereas if you just give a cliched, I mean, what's your top? You must have a top cliched answer. Oh,
good areas. Right areas. Please don't say that anymore. Please don't. What are the right areas?
That is what I'm going to say to you first time we're together.
And also, as a unit?
Yeah, unit. Baton partnerships unit.
Because there's that two-level thing, isn't there? Sometimes someone that sits in front of the press pack has to say things that aren't true, but for the benefit of the team or whatever. So, for instance, if someone's in like absolutely shocking form or whatever, then the coach might say, no, honestly, he's playing really well in the nets or whatever, and no one doubts him whatsoever, even if back in the dressing room everyone sort of puts their head in their hands whenever he starts putting his kit on or whatever. That's part of the job, isn't it, is being nice about people, and that is dishonest. And do you feel...
Lizzie, liar!
Yeah. But do you feel... when a game's being played like that, could you say that as a journalist? Could you say, Trevor Bayliss said that Mark Wood is one of the bravest batsmen he's ever seen, and he's clearly doing this to just, you know, boost his confidence. But could, do you think, in a way, that you have to be part of that theatre, Lizzie?
No, I don't. I think our absolute number one job is to tell the truth as we see it. You know, if you don't do that, then I don't really know what the point of view is as a journalist. Now, of course, you know, someone's truth is someone else's not truth. I mean, I think the fundamental thing is that, and I think the players get this now, is that we're not, everyone's on the same side here, really. You know, we're all on the same, we're all just love cricket. We're all trying to promote cricket. Now, clearly, as journalists, we're trying to get a line and we're trying to get a headline. You know, no one buys a newspaper that says, didn't everyone do well, do they? But we're all on the same side, and we're not actually fundamentally out to get anyone. You know, we don't want someone to fail. And actually, people like to read success. You know, I mean, we saw from 2019, the best read pieces were the ones about the World Cup final and about Ben Stokes at Headingley, you know. Front page, back page, 25 pages in the middle. You know, we love that sort of thing.
But there is that element, isn't there, where you have to... You wouldn't be there. There can't be anyone that's got into that press box that doesn't like cricket and isn't incredibly... are there some?
No, I think everyone fundamentally loves the game. I mean, I think the job can slightly wear you down a bit. I mean, it's quite... It's not glamorous. People think it is, and maybe it is for some people, but it's not glamorous, especially if you're treading the county circuit. I mean, it's not glamorous at all, and it's long days, because when they finish playing, that's when we start work. So, you know, the World Cup final was so stressful for all sorts of reasons, but a lot of it was because it didn't finish till about 7:40. And the newspaper deadline's at 9:00. How are you supposed to write up that mental game? And then we have to go and interview everyone and try and get the quotes in. And I just sat as Joss took the bales off. I just sat and cried. A, because it was so incredible. Also, I was like, oh no, now I've got to do some work and I can't go and party with everyone else.
I suppose that responsibility, if you think, if I'm writing this, I want to write this for someone, say there's someone that hasn't watched any of the World Cup up to now and they haven't watched this game and they don't know the result, and the first way they're going to sort of get any sense of how the World Cup final played out is from my, you know, my writing of it. That, presumably, that's a terrifying responsibility.
It is. Thankfully, on my paper, we have Michael Atherton, so I can just...
As Michael Atherton said, England won the World Cup yesterday. The men's suits are up to no good again.
I mean, I can't praise him enough. He is an unbelievably good writer. You know,
Mark is always going on about how good Mike Atherton is.
I sit next to him sometimes and think...
And
his screen is empty, and then I kind of look at mine and then look back, and his screen's full. And I think, how have you done? How have you just written 1,000 words of incredible, no mistakes?
Because he's on the phone to Miles Jupp every minute, because Miles is the world's biggest fan. That's why.
Mark is absolutely delighted. In fact, I'm quite relieved that normally it's my job to bring every conversation around to the merits of Michael Atherton, and it's just been able to happen. You must be absolutely delighted with this, Mark. I go on about how amazing Atherton is sometimes.
I think this has been teed up before Lizzie's come on. Something has happened here. If you can get anything about Michael Atherton, I'd be truly grateful. Person, I work with Michael Atherton.
It's a meritocracy. It's a meritocracy. The cream rises to the top, Mark. If he's being spoken about because he's good. That's all it is.
He's a big fan of yours, Woody.
Oh, well, I love him as well, then. There we go. Miles, you've been saying all along, I've been telling you, Miles, day after day, what a great guy he is. is there any sort of like relationship between the sort of press writers and then the TV? Or is that, or adversely, is there any sort of tension between each press writer? Is there, or do you all get on well? Or?
No, we do. We do all mostly get on well. I mean, sometimes there are what are called PBIs, press box incidents. They tend to happen at the end of a long tour. I mean, let's face it, you are stuck in a room with people for 10 hours a day, you know, for five days, and then on tour, that, you know, weeks on end, they're going to irritate you, aren't they? You know, by the end of the World Cup, there were some people where I looked and thought, I'm definitely going to sit at the other end of the press box because you're just annoying me now. But no, everyone does mostly get on well. There's a little bit of tension between TV and writers, just because, you know, that's just the nature is who's going to go first, who's going to get the big scoop, who's going to interview the person first, who's, you know, and boring press stuff like embargoes and who's putting this out when and, you know.
What are the protocols regarding a scoop or whatever? If someone, like, gets hold of a story, I mean, is it...
You keep it to yourself.
You keep it to yourself. And that's for instance, like a good recent example would be, say, Alex Hales prior to the World Cup in 2019. Mm. So that's like an Ali Martin story, wasn't it? So he just holds on to it. And the first you would hear about it when you read
it. They publish, yeah. So, you know, that's your job, really. It's so much about contacts. I mean, so much of this job is being on the phone, just chatting to anyone and everyone. And it's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I adore county cricket is that you just can chat. You know, it's so informal and you just can go and chat. And the members, the county members, much as, you know, it's sometimes a bit care in the community, they're really knowledgeable people. You know, is that really rude? You know what I mean?
That's a very, very strong 90s reference.
they're knowledgeable. They're really knowledgeable. So if you get up off your bottom, out of the press box, and I think that's one of the best advices I was ever given was don't just sit in front of your laptop and stare. Go and talk to people, anyone and everyone.
Is glorious, I think, at county cricket. Even now, that sort of thing, you can just kind of wander about almost anywhere and you go and look for a cup of tea and you sort of end up next to where the players are, that sort of thing. Or I used to love that, being able to still go on the outfield during the intervals. That's proper for me, I think.
Yeah, and there are still several places you can do that. Hove, I mean, there's nowhere like Hove. You must love Hove, Mark.
Yeah, great place to play.
Up or down the slope?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? In my height, probably up the slope's probably better because it gives me a little bit more bounce, but there's nothing like running downhill because you can really pick your legs up and get some good momentum. So.
Watching Jofra come down that slope at Hove, I mean, it's terrifying. Wouldn't want to be anywhere near it, would you?
I wouldn't know from Square Leg, so it's rather easy. Yeah.
You don't know how fast it is from side on. Yeah. What with your sort of journalistic senses then, I suppose, in terms of that thing of you're always looking for a story or, the stories are there and you need to uncover it, how does the mind work then? For instance, if you've now had, you've got on your Zoom, you've got Mark Wood sitting in his hotel room. What would be, from a journalistic point of view, what would you pick up? What would be a story? If you had to write, and God, I hope you don't, but if you had to write 500 words based on this conversation, what would you...
Well, I mean, we'd go in on the out for now, wouldn't we? You know, would he love the freebie, the cheats game?
Mark Wood will accept, yeah. If you don't know what to get Mark Wood, get him vouchers, yeah.
And then, yeah. Yeah. Oh.
You two have definitely been on before I've come on here. There's something going on. I've been teed up with the Michael Arthur, and then this out fun out. And
he's a very good writer. He's a very good writer.
He is a very good writer.
I think there's nothing... The out fun out thing, that's sensible. That's absolutely... The amount that gets wasted in this country.
No one loves a freebie more than a cricket hack. We go round grabbing everything we can find.
But the days of sort of buying a book of blank receipts from a taxi driver have gone, haven't they?
Officially, they have. Yeah. Yes, they have. We can't shove lots of booze on our expense accounts anymore, sadly. And I was warned that, you know, being the life of a hack was very boozy, and it's not quite as boozy as I think people think it is. I mean, we don't drink during the day anymore. So they did used to sit in the press box. There was a fridge at the back with lots of booze in. We don't do that anymore. We wait until at least, you know, we've finished our press conference
at
the end of the day.
When I went to India in 2006, pretending to be a journalist, and that I realised quite early on, I kind of assumed it would be boozy. And then we'd get to the end of a meal and think, I'm the only one here who's absolutely roaringly drunk. Everyone's... And I'm the only one who's not going to be here. You know, they'd have had sort of a glass or two each when I'd be at one end of the table. And I would find stuff hysterically funny that other people found deeply inappropriate as a result.
When we go hard, we go really hard. The night before England lost to Sri Lanka in the World Cup at Headingley, we thought we'd go out and have a nice quiet dinner and a couple of drinks. And the next thing I know, I'm walking back with 25 Sambucas on a tray. And we crawled in at, I think it was 4:30. And it was a 10 o'clock start, wasn't it? Or 10.30, 10.30 start.
Stokesy a little bit worse for wear then, was he? Or was he all right?
There were a couple of casualties who didn't make it until the innings break. Didn't make it to work until the innings break, yeah. Big night.
That's very sad to hear. Very sad.
Which is your favourite county ground out of interest?
Oh, I love a trip to Worcester. I love a trip to New Road. And I like a county ground.
In your canoe?
I like a county ground that's a county ground. So I love Hove. You know, I even like Wantage Road and Grace Road. I love Wantage Road.
Yep.
A cricket ground that looks like a cricket ground that isn't trying to be anything else.
Do you like outgrounds as well then?
Oh, Arundel. Where else do I love? I like going
Cheltenham's
to
Nunsen. Cheltenham's nice.
I quite like going to Uxbridge. Uxbridge is an absolute delight. That flat wicket depositing balls onto the A40. I quite like North South, actually, Woody.
Yeah,
I quite like. But it's
well, Scarborough, I suppose. Scarborough's technically an outground, isn't it?
Yeah, Scarborough's a lovely day out. It's a bit raucous, but there's nothing quite like going to Pezone Park and watching the boats being blown up to Sea Life Centre, and yeah, and the funicular railway that goes up the side of the cliff that you could walk up as quick.
And there's that castle, isn't there, in Scarborough, that people don't... Scarborough's got an amazing castle. People, you know, forget about it.
Seagulls the size of albatrosses.
Yeah, they're vicious, aren't they? Really vicious. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, there's so much to love about the county circuit, but it does... Chris Nash does a hashtag county grind, doesn't he? Because it's on Twitter, because it is quite a grind. it's a bit of a grind.
Right, yes. Okay, so this is Mark Wood's Super Over, Liz.
Okay. It's
I don't want to use hackneyed phrases like incredibly popular furniture item or inspiring piece of broadcasting, but if anything speaks for itself, it's this. You've got 90 seconds, thereabouts. Don't think, just speak. Mark Wood, Super Over, starts now.
Right, Lizzie, what's your favourite drink?
Tea.
Favourite music band?
Massive Attack.
Your favourite TV show?
Call the Midwife.
Any superstitions?
No.
What was your favourite school lesson?
Russian.
Would you rather whistle, click, clap or hum?
Oh, clap. Whistling makes me violent. I hate people whistling. I hate it.
What was your favourite childhood toy?
Oh, My Little Pony.
Hot bath or cold shower?
No, hot bath.
Name two types of trouser.
Jeans and cords. What?
And who's your favourite TV owl?
Oh, Professor Yaffle.
By the barest of margins. Yes, Lizzie. Boom, nailed it. Miles, what did you think of that?
I'm very impressed with that. The Professor Yaffle, well, I think was one of the options for... I've got one of my support team has come in looking for Lego Iron Man.
One of the backroom staffs there.
That's right. I'll take it in the north room, thank you. Two headings. Plus fours, please. He's very hardworking. Massive Attack, that's an excellent choice. Professor Yaffle, I'm pretty sure that was what I went for as an owl. And then I think someone said technically Professor Yaffle isn't an owl.
He's a carved wooden owl, bookend.
I would also accept Boo Boo off Clash of the Titans, and that's a mechanical owl. So technically I think we should let it slide. I think the biggest thing for me though was the whistle.
It makes me honestly. If people are whistling in the press box, I go and stand next to them and give them that mum stare over my glasses.
Being in a county ground, though, you must hear whistling all the time.
And it's old men, and they jangle their coins in their pocket and they whistle inanely.
You've opened up a world of hurt for me and you now. Every press conference, I'm going to come in and whistle and say good areas.
You have to understand that Mark communicates almost entirely by whistles.
Oh, you're going to get the mum stare.
I even have something called the wood whistle. It's a family whistle. I'm shocked.
Did your Russian come in useful when you were working in the civil service, Lizzie?
No, I was a bit... I was in the wrong era. Didn't work there in the Cold War, did I?
Lizzie, thank you very much. for coming on.
You're very welcome. I look forward to some cricket.
Hopefully, when this goes out, we'll be maybe
in the lead here.
Yeah, in Sri Lanka,
hopefully. Cool. Lizzie, thank you so much indeed for joining us. I hope there's some cricket for you to see soon.
I hope so.
And if, by any chance, you just exceed an exciting press release, you will undoubtedly spin some gold. All right, very nice to see you.
Lovely to see you guys.
Stay well. Be good.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Well, thank you very much indeed to our guest this episode, Elizabeth Ammon, Legside Lizzie. Thank you for listening. As Mark said, if you have any stories you want to tell us about odd coaching methods or training drills, effectual or ideally ineffectual, the email address is middlepleaseumpire@hotmail.com. Thanks very much for listening. Mark, good luck out there. Please remember in future, when there's other people on the call, just clothing. It's a kind of, I don't want to talk about, I mean, you talk about your coaches continually reminding you of the basics in a sort of social environment, you know, when, you know, clearly when you're on your own in that room, you're having an absolute ball. You know, you've got your giant chest set up in the bathroom, all of these things you do to pass the time, but just, I would just from a sort of, I like you, but that is a lot of leg.
Roger that. Thank you, Miles.
Roger.
Oh, should be taken and is taken. Brilliant from Mark Wood. What a spell this has been.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and email us at middleplease@hotmail.com. Please also leave a review if you've enjoyed it. Thanks to Mark and everyone behind the scenes, including Cricketer's Gin. Middle Please Umpire is an Electric production in association with Playback Media.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. Right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.